Paul Tonko, Nancy Pelosi wanting to be the minority leader in the House of Representatives, her deputy, Steny Hoyer, his deputy, everybody's in their 70s. You know, I'm in my 70s. I like it. I'm not going anywhere. But I'm just wondering, there's now a challenge. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that.
Sure. I think right now the experience factor and the proven leadership of Nancy Pelosi should not be necessarily denied. You know, some are saying, well, you know, we didn't message well and we didn't pick up seats in the House that beyond the net of six or seven or eight. There are some contested, unsettled seats right now. But, you know, their message saying that the messaging was not as strong as it could have been.
I take that to be critical of Nancy Pelosi.
Yes. Okay. I would offer that she had us on a very strong message, one of creating jobs and being competitive in an innovation economy and investing in science and technology, which are some of the main dynamics of an innovation economy. What I believe happens is that when our party, whoever's in the White House, they are the go-to source for messaging. So for the Democrats, the go-to with President Obama in the White House, he is the go-to messenger for the party. And then in a presidential election year, the next go-to messenger I would suggest is the candidate, Secretary Clinton. So by the time you get down the various thresholds, I think our messaging, our voice was one of the least heard of those three. And so to make the litmus test for her to continue to be the minority leader based on messaging is somewhat skewed from what really happens out there traditionally. And I think tradition bore down here again this year. I think that she's been a strong leader. And I think that as we go forward with now the Republican domination of Washington, White House, U.S. Senate, United States House of Representatives, as we go forward with that, in that context, I think a seasoned voice, one that has been on target, very laser sharp focus, is one that will continue to serve us well.
Does Tim Ryan have any chance of beating her?
Oh, I think he does. I think there's always, you know, Tim is respected. And
do you know him?
Yes, yeah.
Well, tell us a little about him.
He's from Youngstown, Ohio.
Ohio.
He's in that Rust Belt, as some would say, or that Midwest zone where
the Democrats lost the election.
Yeah, where the anger was most profoundly expressed. Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. So, you know, he is feeling those sentiments perhaps more strongly than we do. But across the nation, I think those sentiments were there, and we understood them. Perhaps we didn't understand how well Donald Trump was connecting with them. I enjoy working with Tim Ryan. He's a bright guy. But, you know, this is a choice. It comes down to the two individuals who are looking to run. And I think that Nancy, obviously, you know, has proven herself as a leader. And again, you know, she was there when we took back the House. I think being there now with the total control in the hands of the Republicans is a unique opportunity for us to have our message heard. And if there's any complication that's been part of this whole scene, it's been getting the message of House Dems into the mix, into the ether, so that it would be heard and then responded to.
So I take it you're going to vote for her when the election happens. But on the other hand, isn't there something to be said that if you've got something that fails, you know, try to fix it up, get somebody else?
Well, again, I think the question here is, where was the failure? And I think we had quality candidates. We're all on a sound message. But, you know, the dynamics were, you know, White House and candidate versus candidate. And they, you know, you could almost argue there wasn't much public policy discussion. It was a campaign of emotion. It was someone tapping. Someone became that face on, you know, hearing the anger, the fear, the at times the hate, and that identification with that emotion seemed to be what you needed this year.
Could Bernie Sanders have won?
You know, it's always difficult to redo like a campaign based on the outcome that was the actual election. I think that Bernie obviously would have had some stronger support with Dems who wanted to be you know, more true blue in their statement. I think, however, knowing the way this guy would label you, he would have probably been tortured for being this bleeding heart liberal.
We'll never know, right?
Right. I mean, some say Biden would have been the best candidate. He would have won. But, you know, it seems that, you know, arriving on the scene and attaching yourself to those emotions, if identifying, empathizing with that anger was what you needed to do, ironically. And, you know, I think there was 8 years of building this anger based on President Obama serving in the White House. And for some, you know, it was about diversity in the White House. And it was an easy task to just drum up this anger. And we look at some of the measurements out there. I mean, just seeing some of the post-election stuff that obviously was percolating throughout this campaign, the white nationalist convention, where there's almost like a response that was similar to the 30s.
The appointment of Steve Bannon to the White House?
That, too. I mean, that I wrote the president-elect with some of my colleagues, asking him to rescind that appointment. You know, have him as one of the two strategic people responding to you, guiding you in your role as president is problematic. I mean, the sexism, racism, the anger that he's been associated with, it's problematic.
You won big time. To what do you attribute your victory in the face of, you know, the country going in a different direction?
Well, I think it's all about connection. And if you connect with voters, even if they don't agree with you, building a relationship, building a connection, building trust is important. And, you know, I had some people say that they disagreed with me on some issues, but would vote for me just because they trusted me to serve in that role. And that's a comforting feeling to have someone share that with you, because as you can imagine, when you don't agree on issues, if there isn't that development of connection, it's enough for them to walk away from you.
Well, you're the hardest working guy I know. You're everywhere. I've never seen a building being opened or a ribbon being cut that you weren't standing there.
Well, you know, I see that as part of the job. I just tell people all the time, though, that that's just a part of what I do. I want them to know that I do my desk work, too.
Oh, and the other part is you show up here, which is immensely important to all of us.
Well, we enjoy the AMC family, so.
And Paul Tonko, you know, we just love having you here. And when we come back the next time, I'll find something else to talk to you about.
I know you will.